We're talking to a political scientist about some of last night's elections. The biggest news out of the results were the gubernatorial elections in Virginia and New Jersey and the mayoral election in New York City.
Here to talk about these results and what they mean for Democrats and Republicans in future elections is Kyle Condick. He's managing editor of Sabatow's Crystal Ball at the University of Virginia Center for Politics. Kyle, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So one of the closest races yesterday in your neck of the woods in Virginia, the race for governor, Democrat Terry McAuliffe beat Republican Ken Cuccinelli. What can we take away from the results there?
Well, this was a really fascinating race to watch because McAuliffe and Cuccinelli were unusually unpopular candidates. Both of them had generally had their favorability or their unfavorability numbers were higher than their favorability numbers. And both are kind of figures that I think people who follow politics know nationally. Ken Cuccinelli was kind of a controversial state attorney general here in Virginia, and Terry McAuliffe is the chief fundraiser for the Clintons and a former chairman of the Democratic National Committee. And the contrast between essentially a professional fundraiser and a pretty strident social conservative turned off a lot of voters. There was a kind of unknown libertarian candidate who got about 6.5% of the vote, which is pretty high in Virginia for a third-party candidate, and I think that showed the general dissatisfaction with the two choices.
A lot of eyes on Virginia yesterday. It's a swing state in presidential elections. It's a really interesting contrast between urban areas and rural areas. Do people around the country look at this as maybe a little laboratory for a congressional election, a presidential election?
Yeah, I think they do, and I think to a certain extent they're right to do so. Virginia, of all 50 states, Virginia was actually closest to the national presidential voting in 2008 and 2012. So it was kind of the midpoint of the election in both elections. And I think naturally people are looking at it. And, you know, here's the other thing. You know, most political reporters are in Washington, D.C. A lot of them live in Virginia. And so they care a lot about what's going on in their backyard.
It's local news for them.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the other thing, too, is that this was only one of two gubernatorial races. The other one was in New Jersey where, you know, Chris Christie is a huge national figure, but that race was very, very uncompetitive. And the Virginia one was pretty competitive and actually was a little bit closer than the polls indicated on election night.
Well, and the two different sides at various points in that election were trying to make it a referendum on national issues, trying to blame Republicans on the one hand for the government shutdown, blaming the Democratic candidate, linking him to the Affordable Care Act and the troubled release so far. Is that something, as far as you could tell, that voters in Virginia were paying attention to?
Yeah, I think they were, although what was interesting about this race is that even though the polls were kind of weren't really right, they didn't move a ton during October. I think that this race was pretty steady since the late summertime. And I think that was sort of this I think even though we had these big national events happening in Washington, I don't know if they necessarily moved the numbers all that much, although it may be fair to say that a number of Republicans sort of came home to Ken Cuccinelli, perhaps as a result of the bad Obamacare rollout. That may have cost McAuliffe a point or two when it was all said and done.
Before we travel up to New Jersey, is there a tendency to maybe overread an election like this in an odd-numbered year, and it's one of the few data points we have, and we over-extrapolate from this one unique case?
That is an excellent point, and I couldn't have said it better myself. You know, there definitely is a tendency, again, because you know, the Virginia gubernatorial race is one of the only games in town for people to look at. You sometimes see this same dynamic in special congressional elections when, you know, you'll have a special election in, you know, March of the election year or something, and something unexpected happens and people want to turn it into a national referendum and on what's going to happen. And the truth is, I think it's dangerous to do that, particularly in this Virginia race, because A, the midterm election is only is still a year away, and B, I think these candidates were unusually unpopular. And so it was a unique race. that, while very interesting to cover, I don't necessarily know if it tells us a ton about what's going to happen next year.
Theoretically, both parties would elect more, I guess, likable candidates for president, say, in 2016.
Yeah, and that's a good transition to New Jersey.
Let's head up there. Yeah, so this was, Virginia was a close race. New Jersey, was it even a race at all?
I mean, you could make an argument that, Christie was effectively unopposed. Barbara Buono is the Democrat who ran against him, but she had very little actual national party support. And there's a lot of big hitter Democrats in New Jersey that took a pass on this race, most notably Cory Booker, the former mayor of Newark, who is now in the U.S. Senate. He won a special Senate election a few weeks ago. And, you know, Christie, even though New Jersey is a blue state, Christie is an unusually talented politician. I also think that his handling of Hurricane Sandy, which was a huge deal, of course, in New Jersey right before the presidential election last year, I think that was really helpful to Christie's favorability amongst voters. I mean, I think Christie was always going to win, but sometimes handling a natural disaster can be helpful to a politician if it's handled properly. We've seen that in some other places. And so, you know, you pulled all that stuff together, and it made for a very sleepy race. And all everybody cares about now with New Jersey and Christie is whether Christie's going to run for president.
I think
he probably will, and he'll probably be a fairly significant contender on the Republican side.
Any signs from the numbers in that election or from his acceptance speech that might point toward that run?
Well, you know, he did really, really well. And he can point to that and say, hey, I'm electable. I have crossover appeal. But I think there are a lot of Republicans who don't really like him all that much. Although it's really interesting that, you know, Christie was elected in 2009, and he became really notable to, I would say, conservative Republicans because of these viral videos that he made of him basically picking fights with teachers' unions and that sort of thing. It's actually kind of similar to your governor of Wisconsin, Scott Walker. He became kind of a folk hero to people who basically wanted to shrink the size of government and reduce the power of public sector unions. But during Hurricane Sandy, Christie was seen as being too close to President Obama, which, while I think probably helpful back home in New Jersey, I think turned off a lot of Republicans. And so I think if you would ask Republicans who they think is more conservative and better aligns with their principles, I think a lot of Republicans would say Scott Walker aligns better with them than Chris Christie.
Well, and that's one of the threads of reaction to this has been, look, a Tea Party-affiliated guy lost in Virginia, a moderate won handily in a state that votes Democrat in presidential elections. Is there any kind of lesson there, or are these such unique cases that it's hard to learn anything?
I think the lesson from Virginia, well, let's put it this way. If Chris Christie were on the ballot in Virginia, I think he would have been elected governor. I also think that Bill Bowling, who your listeners probably have never heard of, but he's the lieutenant governor of Virginia, a Republican, and he was sort of seen as being next in line to run for governor, but Ken Cuccinelli basically cut in front of him, and that's politics, and Cuccinelli got the nomination. I think if Bowling had been nominated in Virginia, maybe he'd be the next governor of Virginia. And Bowling is sort of a more, he's more acceptable to the business crowd here. And while not really moderate, I don't know if Christie's really moderate either, they aren't as obviously socially conservative as Cuccinelli is.
Just real briefly, just about out of time, I don't want to leave out New York City, first Democratic mayor in 20 years. Any lessons there for Democrats?
You know, it's interesting that Bill de Blasio won in New York, and also the probably more liberal, labor-oriented candidate also won the mayoral election in Boston. And I think that after 20 years of voters in New York City sort of voting for these moderate business Republicans, you know, they decided to sort of go to their roots as being a very Democratic city and voting for, you know, a pretty liberal mayoral candidate, one of the most liberal mayors of New York City, at least in recent history. So, we'll have to see. But I think a lot of it is just, New York City is a very liberal Democratic city. And for the first time in 20 years, it voted its reputation.
Kyle, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Hey, thank you.
That's Kyle Kondik. He's managing editor of Sabatow's Crystal Ball at the University of Virginia Center for Politics.